Okay, welcome. All right, nice to see everyone, both in person and online. And welcome to anyone who's visiting us or first time here. So we're just finishing up how many months? 11 months of exploring these oxfording pictures. So if you're just joining us, you may wonder what those pictures depict and what the purpose of that is. And this is actually a good talk because I'm going to look at them as a whole and some of the teachings that come from them. So it comes from the Zen tradition, and it's basically a way of expressing the journey from ground zero all the way to full awakening, full enlightenment. So it has that kind of way of exploring and describing things. And it also shows some common ways that we get kind of stuck or trapped or confused about our practice. So it's very helpful that way. And I also think it's very helpful because it's not just full awakening. We can see those little moments of awakening, those little moments of releasing, of insight. And these pictures also show how those unfold and evolve. Now, one way that's not so helpful to work these pictures is just try to figure out where you are on those pictures and kind of solidify around that. It can be helpful to notice what's the mode of that in the picture. Does it represent how you are right now in your practice? It could be maybe just your trajectory of your whole practice, or it could be just like a period that you're kind of maybe struggling, or maybe there's a period where you're more peaceful, more insightful. And each of those kind of types of our ways our practice changes has a picture, has a way of we can learn how to work with it from that perspective. And it's easy to look at them as this step-by-step progression, this kind of certification process. You get to picture one, then picture two. It's like getting your purple belt, then your brown belt, and then your black belt, and then your second degree black belt. And just, you can look at it that way. And I think that's not so helpful because we can easily get caught in that selfing around it, egoing around that. That's where I am, comparing where we think we should be. Especially if we, you know, both ways, if we think of ourselves, oh, I'm just back on picture one or picture two, or if we're projecting ourselves outward. I think it's also very helpful to look at these pictures as something that can happen at any time, that we can kind of have actually come back and forth between those pictures. Even in the course of a sitting, you might find yourself going through these different cycles or stages or phases, if you will, of our practice. And certainly during a week, you can see that. And I just taught a retreat. I see a few people who are on that retreat at Cloud Mountain. And in that 5-day period, you know, we went through all kinds of cycles. There's sometimes that we're just struggling with the hindrances, just trying to find our breath. Other times there's a quality of deep calm, a deep steadiness. And recognizing what does the practice look like right now is very helpful, because then we can actually meet it and work with it more skillfully. If we look at our practice how it is right now and think we should be someplace else, we create a lot of suffering for ourselves. We create a lot of constriction for ourselves. So each of these pictures has certain assumptions that they hold, if you will, or kind of a logic or the way we're seeing the world, seeing ourselves in our spiritual practice. And they also have ways of practicing. You know, particularly around maybe the goal of practice or what the practice looks like. And in particularly tonight, I want to explore three aspects and how this changes over these 10 pictures. First one is effort. How we effort. What's our quality of effort? What's wise effort? How does that look like at the beginning of these pictures and all the way through? Right, so I'm going to tend to talk about it as this progression, but remember what I said about it, where it's much more of a circular process. Right. The other one is how we view the ox. What is this ox? Our true nature, kind of the goal, if you will, of our spiritual practice, how that also changes through these pictures. And then finally, how that sense of you or me or I as the meditator changes throughout these pictures. Because there's a quality that is really distinctive as we go through each of these layers. So I thought, since we do have Zoom and we do have this capacity, I was going to just show all the pictures and just not go through the verses, but just show each of those images as we go through that. And but holding as we go through that, each of those three, you know, how effort, how that sense of ox changes, and how that sense of you as a meditator changes. And then we'll go in through those a little bit more detail. All right, so I'm going to screen share. Wow, look at technology here. Okay, so you can all see that online. All right, so the first picture, let's go back. There we are. Okay, let's go back to the very beginning. Okay, first picture, searching for the ox. Right, so, and if you're having trouble seeing or visually impaired, I'll describe the picture briefly. So this is a picture of confusion and bewilderment. There's that urgency looking for this ox. You're lost in these woods, in these forests, going up and down through the valleys, searching for the ox. And then the next picture is seeing, is finding the footprints, seeing the glimpse of this ox. So something that you've searched and struggled to try to find, suddenly you see a glimpse of it. And then from the footprints, then we actually see the ox itself. In this case, we're just seeing kind of the rear end of it. So it's still mysterious. It's still very elusive. Then catching the ox. So now we actually get into trying to tame it. We're not taming it. We're just trying to catch it. And this stage is very wild, that sometimes the ox is, we kind of have a grip on it. Sometimes it's vanished. It's gone into the woods, into the forest. Then taming the ox. You can see how the ox is much more gentle. It's much more calm. There's a slackness between the line of this little figure holding the ox. It starts to follow us willingly. And then this picture, riding the ox home, riding home on the ox. So there's a sense of harmony, a sense of interconnection between the ox and this figure representing us. Right, so this is all, after this point, we can kind of identify pretty easily with all these stages. And in the course of finding our attention steady, our attention distracted, and how do we actually connect, unify our mind and body? And then there's the big shock. The ox forgotten, and the self remains. This thing we've been searching, struggling to tame, struggling to catch, disappears. The ox is forgotten and the self remains. Then forget both ox and self, self and ox. So now the sense of us as a meditator is falling away. Then returning to the origin, so this is even a deeper release, a deeper quality of awakening. And finally, coming back into the marketplace with extended hands, what we just covered last month. And this is the integration of our practice into our lives. It's also the full circle of it, that we come back from emptiness into form. We actually see how we can live a life from this place of deep awakening, this deep understanding. All right, so I'm going to stop sharing. Okay. And I'm going to leave the... Okay, good. I did not crash the whole thing. I open up on a different computer here. All right. So I want to give you that overview as you kind of hold... If you can, print off these pictures and just kind of look at them as this whole, as this unit. And I mean, these images themselves are very beautiful, very striking. The verses have their own way of teaching also. So let's go through these three elements of how effort changes, how the sense of the ox changes, and also how the sense of you as the meditator, us as the meditator, also changes. Now, effort, you can look, remember those pictures, changes tremendously throughout these. You know, there's the effort, of course, trying to find any kind of, where's this ox, then searching for it. And then there's, and each of these pictures, well, not all each of them, but sometimes there's this point where you see the glimpse of the ox and there's a sound of nature is calling us back into the stillness. So these pictures are teaching us this relationship to effort and how sometimes we need tremendous effort in our practice when our minds are so distracted, or perhaps we're so gripped by something very, very disturbing in our lives, very shaking in our lives. And yet if we keep that kind of level of effort all the time, it gets too much. Then we move into less and less effort, more and more effortless. Now, effort has this interesting quality, this built-in discernment of what leads to suffering and what leads to the end of suffering. And so this basic from wise efforts perspective, we understand, how do I use my effort in a way that helps suffering fall away? How do I use my effort in a way that allows freedom to start to arise? And one of the messages that these pictures teach us is this is a very relative quality. I remember when I was first practicing, it felt like I was, I think every breath, every other breath, I would be lost in thought. So I come back, where's the breath? I'm lost again. So sometimes it feels like you're walking through a blizzard and you just have this guy rope that you're trying to each step trying to hold on to. It's so easy to be swept away by the momentum of our thoughts. So this is often an early part of our practice. You can see that early stage of trying to find the ox, struggling to catch the ox. And we can circle back into that anytime. The right circumstances visit us. Our life changes in a way that we're not expecting. We can be back just, where is that breath? Where is that moment's connection? And so in those times, it's really helpful to be directive with our energy, directive with our will, if you will. I'm going to focus on this breath, this footstep. Have this feedback. This is where like noting is such a helpful practice because it gives our mind something to do. It says, okay, mind wants to be distracted. Notice when you're breathing in. Notice when you're breathing out. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh often has this quality of you know, relaxing with that, breathing in peace, breathing out peace, to kind of bring this quality of kindness, of compassion to the breath. Same thing with walking, just taking this one step. Right? And so the feedback is when you get distracted, you know that you've lost that noting. I remember early in my practice, I would be noting my breath and I'd be so confused and distracted. I'd be noting breathing in when I was actually breathing out. You know, you could just get this wave of sleepiness and hindrance and you just, but that's how effort looks. It feels like a lot of struggle, like trying to catch that ox, trying to reel in this massive thing called our attention, called our mind. And yet, even something like noting, at some point, we notice that it becomes a little too heavy-handed in our practice. It's like when we can learn how to have our attention steady, then our effort or something like noting can be much more soft, much more quiet, just simply meeting this moment. I can feel if I bring too much energy to that meeting, it distorts what I'm seeing. I can't see it so clearly. Like if I took a real big spotlight and I shined it on one part of my experience and I kept having to bring back, I could see it clearly. But at some point, the glare is too much and a much softer light is what's needed. And so at some point we realized that, okay, something like noting, we can release it or let it become much more quiet. And again, this is part of the trajectory of our whole practice. But also remembering we can cycle back, and eating noting, for example, is a technique. And at some point, as you see in these pictures, the effort really falls away. You know, there's this point of mastery with the ox, that there's this harmony, this interconnection. And the ox is basically going where it wants to, but we want it to go that way, or vice versa. There's this beautiful harmony. Okay, so the effort's really quieted down. And then suddenly the ox goes away. And then effort, we start to explore, what does it mean to release effort? What does it mean to have effortless effort, as they would say in Zen? And this is an interesting process, because often our effort is really embedded in our practice. It's really embedded in who we are as meditators. It's really embedded in, you know, perhaps in inadequacy and self-judgment and control. All these things are part of how we control our attention. I'm choosing to let go of something that my mind wants to really focus on, like what's on TV tomorrow, you know, versus what's this breath really like. At some point, that effort starts to turn on its head. There's enough momentum of our practice that it's actually very important for us to step back, to step out of the driver's seat, to let meditation do itself, to let meditation flow from someplace else. We realize that something else is starting to direct the meditation. Something else is present that's always been here. We've just been confused and covered up. So it's not like a laissez-faire, just kind of letting go of like, okay, I'm just going to give up. It's much more of a releasing, a surrendering from wisdom. If something else is starting to take over that's outside of our ego, outside of our will, we could say it's maybe stillness, maybe it's the heart, maybe it's this quality of compassion that's starting to come more and more to the forefront. And so then the later pictures, there's this subtle quality of effort of letting go of the ox, letting go of the sense of me who's the meditator, letting go of, you know, there's the brilliance of the, you know, that Enzo, that circle. And there's a letting go of any attachment to that, into the formless. And then there's letting go of the formless as we come back into form. And so you can see how effort has this beautiful way of changing, of evolving. Even that sense of us being the witness starts to change. Like I'm no longer holding that position of me looking, me observing, allowing awareness to come to the forefront. So with effort, you know, in our practice, recognizing how much effort is needed in this moment. You know, maybe you do need a lot of effort to meet this moment, to call yourself back. And maybe you need a lot less effort. That's the discernment that grows and matures in our practice. But we can start to see, okay, what is needed right now? Anyone who's a master in something, who's very skilled in something, if you look at their whole trajectory of their development, at first they're using a lot of force, a lot of effort, and eventually they can just very subtle. This doesn't look like they're doing much, but they're doing exactly what's needed in that moment. Exactly what's needed to affect what needs to happen. So effort, you know, changes tremendously in these pictures. Then there's the ox. You know, how does the ox change? How does the ox evolve? Now, this ox is interesting. Teaching from these pictures, I would define the ox in different ways. Sometimes I would think of it as our true nature. Yeah. And yet there's this kind of wildness to the ox, this kind of untamedness to the ox. So I think what I settled on is it's our true nature, but it's combined with our kind of our level of delusion, if you will, or ignorance that's keeping it wild, keeping its mood from us being able to access it. We can sometimes look at the ox as our practice itself, but it's a practice in terms, in order to connect with our true nature. So it's interesting, if it is our true nature, then it's already here, right? It's already part of what we are. And this is this interesting journey we go on, that we're searching for something outside of ourselves. We're looking for our true nature out there, after learning this technique, after going on these retreats, after doing this and that. And this is, seems to be the way we are wired, that we externalize something that's actually internal until we realize it's actually already here. It's already present. And you can see this very clearly in these pictures. The ox is out there, out there, out there. Gets closer and closer until finally the ox disappears. The ox is actually, maybe you could say the ox swallows us, or we swallow the ox, or we merge with the ox. We no longer realize, we realize that this ox is no longer external. It's actually what and who we are. So the first picture is searching for the ox. This is, it's such a poignant picture, has so much potential. When you think back to what started you to practice, you know, some insufficiency in your life, something wasn't working perhaps, some curiosity, you know, wanting something to, you heard something about Buddhism, heard something about the Dharma, heard something about the, your true nature that drew your heart. So maybe you're drawn more to explore, to meet that. Maybe you're drawn more to avoid, to escape the pain of your life. So many of us, we come to practice from dukkha, from suffering. And we've tried so many different ways to try to alleviate that, to try to fix it. And then finally, we try the practice, we try the Dharma. And so this process of finding the ox, seeing the ox, you know, we look so many different places. We try different techniques, we try different ways of practicing, and then eventually we start to see a glimpse of the ox. We get this sense, well, that terrain holds the resonance that I'm seeking. It has this flavor of this stillness, this true nature, this compassion. However you frame it is really up to you. Making that alive is what's important. And once we start to see traces of it, then we actually see the ox. So we're getting more of a taste. Okay, there's the ox. Now, these, if you remember the verses, there's this interesting place when we first see the ox, there's kind of a stillness. There's a beauty. There's like, there's a nightingales or singing, something like that. There's a connection to nature. There's a peace that's coming in. It's like we're connecting with our true nature. We're actually seeing it. And then we go to the next picture, as so often we do in our practice. We have these moments of quiet and stillness. And then what do? We want to get back to those. We have to fight to try to get back. We have to struggle. We have to engage. This is such a common thing we do as practitioners, as human beings. And we create this struggle. We create this quality of distance as we try to find that ox. And eventually, through practicing, we start to quiet those delusions, those ignorances, those qualities of reactivity. And then the ox is starting to be seen much more clearly as part of us. And in that seeing, we start to harmonize with it. We start to tame the ox. And before that, there's always the battle. There's the struggle. That sometimes we have a grip on the ox. Sometimes the ox is vanished. This all, I'm sure, sounds familiar. At some point, we find a way through that separation, through that struggle. We exhaust all other possibilities and we finally meet the moment how it is. And that's when the ox disappears. Ox vanishes. Ox is forgotten. In the sense of the externalization of our true nature. We realize it's right here. It's actually very clearly seen, clearly sensed. Now that may sound esoteric in some ways it is, but I think if we look at our practice in the right way, we see there's many moments of that. There's many moments of that connection to the present moment. There's not much that needs to be done. We're simply abiding with what's here. It could be in the depth of meditation. It could show up in the middle of our lives. I'm just here with this experience. I'm just connected to this moment. Then the ox, when it's forgotten, there's this deepening and deeper and deeper process of becoming really connected to that true nature. So the ox, you know, representing our spiritual practice, representing our true nature. And then finally, the practitioner, how that changes through these series. And this is really a mirror of our effort. It's a very much a mirror of how we view the ox. The sense of me as a meditator is always changing with our effort, changing with how we see the ox. So usually we tend to hang out perhaps for a long time in the sense of me doing the meditation, me being the meditator. Me learning how to meet my hindrance, meet my monkey mind, meet my distracted mind. And we're very much trying to work through that, trying to find some pathway through that. And so these are all the pictures where the little person is, you know, trying to find the ox, seeing the ox, trying to catch the ox. We're very much in the driver's seat. We're very much in control of that, in the struggle of that. This is natural. This is, I think, we all have to start there. We have to learn to marshal our attention, to learn to connect, to let go, to steady, to learn how to meet the moment without distraction, without judgment. So you allow the moment to be just how it is. You know, these places where the self is really connected to the practice, the self isn't that comfortable. There's a quality of insufficiency, of inadequacy. If we look, is often driving our practice. I'm trying to get over myself. I'm trying to become a better me. I'm trying to learn how to meet this sorrow in my heart, sorrow in the world. And so there's this identification that's going through our practice. And so there's this kind of background level of suffering that's built into that. And then when there's a point where the ox and the person start to join, when they start to ride the ox home, when it becomes more tame, then it starts to be a big shift, a sense of being contented, being at peace. The self, you know, your sense of you, it feels like there's not much that I need to do in this moment. I can simply relax into this moment, how it is. I can allow myself to be how I am in this minute, this moment. And then once the ox is following us and we're following the ox, you know, there's a sense of being at rest, sufficiency. And then from this point, once the self is relaxed, it's no longer having to do something, to prove something. That's when it starts to fall away. The ox falls away, self remains, and the self falls away. There's no central reference point, right? So this is a very subtle part of the teachings of these pictures. And yet that's part of our practice. So these pictures, we really move back and forth between around these three elements of effort, around where the ox is, where that sense of me as a practitioner is. One day, one sitting, we might have this feel, this deep sense of insight, this just deep opening to a quality of peace, or maybe of interconnection. And the next day, we seem to have completely forgotten that as we reengage in life, or life reengages in us, and we're fighting it, we're struggling with life. And this can be a place of great discouragement in our practice if we're not viewing it in the right way, I think. We can easily get thrown back into doubt, questioning, okay, I'm not up for this path. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure why I've regressed so much. And that's where these pictures can work against us, that we think, okay, it's a linear process, and somehow I was at picture number 6, and now I'm back to picture number 1. I can't even see where the ox is. It was really helpful when I was reading a sutta, and I saw that the Buddha, after he awoken, it wasn't like he was free and clear of struggle. That Mara was this personification of doubt, of delusion, of greed and hatred, would keep coming and visiting him, trying to trick him, trying to convince him. Right? So that's the doubt that comes. That's the confusion that comes. Even after we've had glimpses or deep insights into our true nature. And the Buddha would eventually see Mara and say, okay, I see you, Mara. And Mara would slink away disappointed. So when we get caught in our doubt, we think, okay, somehow I've regressed. I've lost my practice. I would encourage us to reframe it this way. That let's say we all have a certain quotient of delusion, of ignorance, kind of built up for some reason. And we're practicing, we're going through different layers of that, like a layer cake or something. Okay, so we go through a layer, and there's all that delusion. And then we get through that, and there's this kind of sweet spot. There's a sense of clarity, of peace, of ease. And then the next layer is another layer of delusion coming up. And so it's not so much that we're kind of completely regressing and losing our practice. It's actually we're purifying these different layers of delusion. They're starting to work through our system. And when they work through our system, in the middle of it, we lose that perspective. We think, okay, I thought I always knew how to meditate, but I have no idea how to meditate in this moment. I'm back at picture 1, picture 2, picture 3. Right? And so doubt, the message of doubt can be incredibly discouraging at this point. But reframe it as, okay, this is actually a gift, that there's this level of delusion here. I can just have confidence in myself, confidence in the practice, take refuge in the Dharma, in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. That allows me to meet that as clearly as I can. And the meeting itself, you'll learn about delusion. You learn about your own patterns of reactivity, your own qualities of confusion. I remember seeing this when I teach retreats and I can meet with people a couple of times in the retreat. It's interesting to see that people go through these waves of delusion and then clarity, struggle and clarity, hindrances and clarity. And whatever they were one meeting, the next time they're probably the exactly opposite. And maybe the practice is actually working perfectly. You know, it's actually this holograph, this weaving back and forth. And as long as we find ourselves, okay, whatever picture I'm on, whatever picture seems to describe what my mind state is, my meditative state is right now, okay, that's all right. Roll up my sleeves. Okay, breathing in, breathing out. that's wise effort. That's the wise use of the ox, wise use of ourself. Other times, there's this any sense of movement toward or away, any sense of me as a meditator creates this big distance, and the effort is releasing that. So practice looks lots of ways. And so hold these pictures not as this linear progression, but as a roadmap. It's like you drop into it and say, okay, this is where I am right now in this practice. How do I meet that? How do I meet that as clearly as I can? Because each of these images, as we've explored, have both their teachings and also the way we get caught. So learning to see how we get caught and how we can release those. All right, so I think that's all I wanted to say. Let's just sit quietly for a couple of moments, letting those words settle. And then I'll talk about the homework for this week. As we sit together, what picture represents how the moment is right now? Without judgment, without comparison, just the discernment of seeing. This is how this moment is right now. And in that seeing, you also hold it lightly. You realize it can change, it can evolve. All right, thank you for your kind attention. And so in a moment, we're open up for some questions and hopefully I can help clarify what I was speaking of, your questions. But the homework, so hopefully online you're able to see it, right? And in person, you're able to get the old-fashioned paper slip. So reflect on your practice over how many months, years, decades you've been practicing. All the different cycles and stages that you've gone through, right? When you first started off, when you had that difficult period, when you stopped practicing and you came back, all those different stages. You know, so certainly there's a trajectory of our practice over the years, over the time we practice. There's also these weekly, you can say, ups and downs, struggles and peace. You can say even daily there's like that. And see how the various ox-herding images can really speak to those cycles. They can kind of capture kind of the mode of practice. And in particular, notice how effort, the sense of the ox, and the sense of you as the practitioner changes with each stage or cycle. What happens when you release comparison and judgment and simply meet how practice is right now? And so that's probably the most important thing. Not to be caught in comparison or judgment, but just meeting yourself how you are. Meeting yourself how you are. All right, so let's see if there's any questions or sharing. So both online and in person, if you like to raise your physical hand here in person and virtual hand online. The silence doesn't have to be awkward. It can simply be receptive, just waiting for something to arise in it or not. All right, Carlito.
More of a comment, I guess. Just kind of, it was funny. I was sitting there thinking about, it's like an onion, and then immediately you went to the layers. And so I was, personally for me, I find that things get really noisy when it's a method of blocking. And so it's like, oh, things are really noisy. Geez, what's underneath, right? And so I just wanted to sort of confirm from my experience what you were saying about the layer cake. I'm waiting for that sweet spot just for a while. That would be nice. But yeah, that has been my experience. And that, like, right now things are very noisy. And it's so there's peeling another layer off, you know, and seeing what's underneath. So yeah, I just wanted to sort of confirm what you were saying through my experience. But yeah.
Yes, thank you, Carlito. Yeah, there's times of noise, of difficulty, of struggle. And how, you know, there's this coming and going of those. And sometimes it's really, you know, how do I learn to meet this moment? Sometimes we hang out in that struggle until, you know, there is this movement of these ox herding pictures, that the struggling with the ox eventually leads into that taming of the ox. You know, so how do I tame that? How do I find that way through? And sometimes it's like we don't, it takes, you know, a long time to figure that out. You know, because it's like we're really bumping up against these. Sometimes it's the power of delusion, the power that keeps us disconnected. Sometimes it's the momentum of our past and all those struggles and difficulties. It's kind of like there's this kind of two waves kind of meeting in this moment and learning how to navigate that. You know, as we explored back in wherever month that was, when we were trying to catch the ox and tame the ox. It's like there's so many different skillful ways of doing that. Mm-hmm. And we also have to be willing to always be evaluating. Am I doing a practice in a way that's actually leading to releasing that, releasing the suffering, releasing the contraction? Or am I, you know, in a way that's opening to it? That's that wise effort, has that discernment to see clearly.
Yeah, and willing to experiment maybe.
Exactly, yeah. You have to experiment all the time because unfortunately, there's not just one mode of practice that just do this and, you know, it'd be everything. Right. Some practices are kind of built that way, that you practice until the practice itself fails you, and that itself is almost built into the logic of the system.
Yeah, maybe but each layer kind of requires a different approach, perhaps, or something, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. I like that idea. Sorry, I don't know. I wish I had two cameras here so you could see. Like the idea of Mara being kind of this personification of delusion and being kind of tricky and trying to find different ways of, you know, it's like, oh, you think you know how to do it? Okay, let me do this roadblock. And you realize there's this roadblock that I used to always be open to, right? Another way of saying it is however practice works for us, it's so easy to say, yeah, I did it. You know, I've got it. But that little bit of, yeah, I've taken ownership of that, that creates the seed for delusion to have this root. Mm. And so eventually we have to let go of that identification. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, these pictures teach that and our practice teaches that.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Carlito. All right. Anyone else like to ask or share anything? Yeah, Deb, come on down.
So I think tonight where I am in my practice is struggling with catching the ox.
Yes.
I went to the gym yesterday and did some work with some weights that weren't good for my back. So my back is hurting tonight. Mm. And so sitting is the worst posture to be in. Mm. So I'm sitting and I'm squirming. I'm thinking, oh man, this really hurts. I really don't want to sit anymore. But so then, and then I do have a history of having some back difficulties. So when you said about, you know, how that triggers kind of these memories of like, oh, it's this thing again, and it's always going to be this way, and blah, 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 blah. And it's really quite an intrusive series of thoughts that come into it. And so I just wonder, how would you, I mean, so that's where I am. You know, it'll get better in a few days. But right now it kind of hurts. So to say I want to meet that moment, well, I don't want to meet that moment. I want my back to stop hurting. right? I want it to stop hurting.
Right.
Right now. How can I come to that moment with more easefulness? Or is that the challenge? And is that part of catching the ox and struggling with the ox? Because I'm not riding on this animal's back, you know, playing the flute right now. It's a little earlier in the game than that. That's not where I am. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you're trying to practice your bronco riding and the.
Yeah, and I got thrown.
Got thrown. Yeah, so it's a great, great, very practical question, because these ox herding pictures, it's like it's teaching from metaphor, right? It's teaching from image, and that brings out a different way of relating. And so, how do we, you know, meet something very practical like that? So, and you question, you know, one of the questions is, well, you know, how do you meet that moment? You know, because you don't want to meet that moment. And so, this is what's so fascinating about practice is that. The way that you're describing this condition, you know, this temporary, you know, pain, physical pain, you know, it's making it very hard to sit. It's very uncomfortable, right? And yet you're sitting, yet you're practicing, right? So there's a level of struggle that's kind of self-chosen, mm-hmm. right? Some people would just say, okay, I'm going to not come, or I'm going to, you know, do something else. Mm-hmm. And so then there's a question. I always, when I hear someone describing this, and I hear a lot of people describing physical pain, whether they're on retreats or sitting, it's, you know, because we're human bodies, right? So I like to see, okay, is that struggle wise? Is it teaching, or is it not so wise? You know, that's kind of embedded in that. We can sometimes struggle with the ox more than we need to struggle with it. And my guess is that probably the way to practice with it is to like have laid down during the sitting. So your back is supported. Have your knees up. So there's a way of taking in the pressure off your back. So, because I always have to look at how much struggle there is with and my capacity to hold it. Right. So if I can have this big container that can hold it, then I can hold the struggle. I can meet the struggle. That's actually helpful. But if the struggle is bigger than my container for holding it, then it's not so helpful. Mm-hmm. So that's that discernment. Like, well, maybe right now, just, you know, let the body really be supported. Let the body relax, not to try to push that. Mm-hmm. Other times it might be really helpful to explore that, especially if we really are always moving away from pain and trying to avoid pain. Let me learn how to meet it, to be still with it. I think our practice probably self-selects a lot of those people out, because we sit still a lot, and you have to have some willingness to sit through that, right? So often it's more of that compassion, being that discernment comes in. So does that make sense? And what the ox looks like is really part of his. The struggle is not only the ox, it's you, you're bringing the struggle to the page too.
Yes, I am struggling. Yeah. So yeah. Maybe lying down. Yeah. I'll try that next time. I'll try it now.
Yeah. Any follow up on that? No. Good. All right. Back online. Anyone want to ask or share anything? You guys are quiet tonight.
I can share something if you don't mind, Tim.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm probably searching for the ox. By the way, thank you for the wonderful talk. I'm not, sometimes I even wonder if I'm even looking for the ox. I'm pre-searching for the ox. I think I vacillate between searching for the ox and, I guess, dancing with Mara, perhaps. And so I interpret the first paragraph as, you know, we dive into delusion and we seek pleasure from delusion, but ultimately it becomes empty. And then we try again, and then it's ultimately empty. And you become exhausted from seeking pleasure in other places that's ultimately not fulfilling. And when I read this one section, my favorite part is my strength failing and my vitality exhausted, I cannot find the bull, but I only hear the locust chirping through the forest at night. And for me, that's a powerful image. I think I'd rather sit down on the path and listen to the locusts for a little while. And maybe that's, at least for me, saying, I think I can leave the suffering behind and begin a path. So I'm at the very beginning, and seeing these pictures is quite fulfilling. And I don't know, I like the locusts. That's just me.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Yeah, I think that I love that line of that, you know, I can't find the ox, I'm exhausted. And there's the locust chirping, or the sound of nature. And how that brings a quality of it's really, in some ways, that's the whole practice, is just realizing that the struggle that we are imposing on the moment is optional. You know, and that we can anytime just relax into the beauty of nature, the beauty of our own inner nature. And there's this way that it's like teaching us, like, well, you're struggling a lot, but that's self-imposed. And so there's different levels that we kind of up the energy around this struggle until finally we let go in deeper and deeper levels. But I think that's, you know, that the sense of searching for the ox, where is the ox? It's again, it's an ongoing dialogue. You know, where is my spiritual journey in the midst of this real life situation with my back hurting? Where's the ox in the midst of this argument with my loved one, with my work, with whatever it might be? You know, that's, where's that ox? And we often do have to kind of exhaust ourselves till we finally let go, until we learn that lesson, and then we take that path sooner and sooner. Thank you, Robert. Yes, do you mind coming over so they can see you and hear you online? Hi, August.
Yeah. And if you knew me, you would know that I cannot not share.
All right. We're good.
So I've been following with Tuareg on Thursdays,
yes,
these tales. And it was interesting today when you said where I am. I had a difficult day and I thought, oh, I'm pulling the ox. Hmm. And I think this relates to what Carlita said and what with Deb's back is that it didn't occur to me until today that yogi had not dealt with anything except the path. Mm. The yogi wasn't having to buy food or go to work or have kids or have a back. Like, it was just the path. But the way I'm relating to nothing new, but just the parts of my life that are very difficult that all surface today is different. Mm. Is it from the path, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it felt like, oh, I'm struggling, but it's that life is imposing. Things are happening and I'm reacting, but I'm also reacting in a way that's less reactive, for
that's
lack
right.
of a,
yeah, that's right.
a better way of saying it. I wish that there were more pictures where the back hurt or they were fighting or something, because I'm going on retreat next week and I couldn't wait to get there because of that. Yeah. Leaving, even if it's only in my mind, if it's the struggles are just in my mind, it's easier. I want to say it's not, but it is. It's easier to put it away. So in the midst of the marketplace where he is at the end or they are at the end, it's harder. It's harder than when I'm sitting on my cushion.
That's right. Yeah, I think that the marketplace, I mean, it's each picture has its own little marketplace, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that shows up, that'd be a nice kind of way of exploring how, wow, you know, what does it look like to be struggling with this moment, with this situation and my relationships and my work and all my history. It all kind of comes forth in those moments. And as you said, though, there's also this transformation that our lives start to change from our practice, that even though there's still struggle, the struggle is lighter. It's not as gripping. It's not as all-encompassing as it used to be. Mm-hmm. And you also see that the way you respond is also changing. And that's always the paradox between life and retreat. You know, these pictures are kind of like
a retreat.
Yeah, you're just kind of going off, and you know, part of that is to just have this kind of purity of metaphor, I think, but it's really, and you have to see, okay, where, you know, how do I balance that seclusion of retreat, that letting go of my life, and how do I bring back integration? And the answer is we do both, right? Excuse me, sorry.
Yes, the no. I want the problems only in my head. Problems. Yeah. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Autumn. I'm cold last week, so I'm just not sick anymore, but sometimes get the drainage there at the wrong time. But that's part of that, you know, koan, and how can we, put the mic back on? Yeah. All right. So thank you for sharing. Anyone else like to ask or share anything? Okay, are we about done for the night then? All right, so next week we'll have a discussion. So we'll explore this, the homework, and also do like a recap of the talk. We have a chance to talk with each other to explore this and to bring us through, you know, forth in your own experience. And then we're going to actually take the next 2 weeks off at Sims, because it's the holiday for the Christmas and New Year's. So we'll have about 2 weeks off, and then January would be 8th, is that right? Will be our annual refuges and precepts. So Tori and I will be here. And the ninth. Got the word on the street. All right. So thank you all, and have a wonderful evening. Thank you.